Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, December 18th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is not with me because for the month of December, we will not be available on the same day, so we have to record separately. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, last night we went and we saw Wicked in the movie theater. I don't think I've been to a movie theater, I don't even know in how many years, certainly before the pandemic. So it's 2024 now. The pandemic was 2020. We used to go when Greg lived here. That was a long time ago. But we have so much streaming stuff that we tend not to go to the movie theater. It's just so cozy in our house. But movie theaters have changed. We went and sat in these seats in our local movie theater. I mean, we have a great movie theater that shows the first run movies. I mean, it's maybe three or four miles from our house. And you go in there and they have recliners. There are certain seats, not all of the seats are recliners, but down in front, they have recliners and there's a drink holder and you press a button and they're electronic and they move your feet out and you can lie back and watch the movie. It was so cool. We saw Wicked and I have to say, Wicked is worth seeing in the theater. It's worth not waiting. And Ron gets a senior discount for the movie ticket. So it wasn't too bad. But anyway, so we saw this movie. It was almost 3 hours long and it went by like that. It ended and it goes, end of part one. And they're going to have part two in a year. It comes out almost a year to the day that this one came out. This one came out, you go see it in the theater on November 22nd. Next year in 2025, it'll be November 21st, the same Friday, the Friday before Thanksgiving. So anyway, we'll go back and see it. I had not seen a movie in a movie theater in so long, and this is one that was worth doing. You lay back, and it's really in your face. It's epic-like old movies, like The Wizard of Oz must have originally been back in whatever year The Wizard of Oz was made, 30s or 40s, I don't even remember. But it was really epic. The sets, the costumes, it was overwhelming. If you have sensory issues, it might be difficult to watch this. I have a little bit of sensory issues because of the chronic Lyme and my neurological issues. But I managed to get through it and I was okay. But it was really intense. And if you tend to get, it was very emotional. There was a lot of emotional stuff going on that was super intense. And just watching it was very loud. There was a lot of music. There was a lot of intense activity going on. It was very in your face. And there was some very in your face emotional political stuff going on in the movie too. You see, in 2003, when the original Broadway show came out, it was during the Bush administration. So there were some pointed things that were obviously dealing with the Bush administration, what was going on in politics at that time. And it kind of still applies today. So you'll see what that is when you get there. But I don't want to give anything away, except that it is really pretty seriously epic. And the idea is that there's a very positive portrayal of a green witch. Elphaba is a green witch, and she's the hero of the story. And that's very, to us naturopaths, and big shout out to Susan Weed, who calls herself a green witch. She refers to herself as a green witch, and women who use herbs as green witches. She's literally a green witch. She's green and she's a witch. And one of the things I understood about Cynthia Erivo is that they asked her whether she wanted to be colored green with makeup or she wanted to be CGI green. And she chose to be colored green because she wanted to have the experience of actually being green, and she could feel it and see it and look in the mirror and see that she was green. Of course, when she's looking at the dailies while they're filming the movie, she can see herself on the screen. And the people in the movie are going to be reacting to her as green, if she's actually green. I so respect that choice. And Cynthia Erivo was so regal. She was so beautiful and so poised and so regal. She just really, really created this character in an amazing way. And it's very interesting to me. I mean, not to get into the plot or the politics too much, but that in the movie they chose to have a black woman play this hero. And in the original Broadway show, Idina Menzel played Elphaba, and she was green. And she's a Jewish woman. So it's very interesting that the heroes of the story, and it'll make sense when you see the movie, that the woman in this movie was two marginalized groups. Yes, I know, of whatever you think of Jews in this country, Jews, we are not marginalized in the sense of, we're not socioeconomic, we're not economically marginalized, but to an extent we are socially, because stuff goes wrong in this country and people start blaming the Jews. I'm not saying all people, but the Nazis come out, and neo-Nazis and conservatives, and there's microaggressions against Jews. There's anti-Semitism happens. It's happening now. So it was very interesting that at that time they chose a Jewish woman to play Elphaba, and this time they chose a black woman to play Elphaba. Clearly socioeconomically challenged in this country. So, and the fact that she's a hero is amazing. And that she's a green witch. And again, big shout out to Susan Weed and Naturopaths Everywhere and Herbalists Everywhere, that's who they think is going to save the country, or that is going to save Oz, a green witch. So without saying much more, it was really, really intense, really emotional. If you have sensory issues, it might be difficult. If you have Nervines that you want to take before you go, if you take medication, you might want to take it before you go, just to keep yourself calm, because you will need, unless you're not an emotional person, after you view this movie, you're gonna need to calm down. And you might not want to go to a really late show, because you might have trouble sleeping, really. We went to a 6:30 show, and we probably should have gone to a matinee, because I had a little trouble like winding down and getting to sleep. I didn't do lights out until midnight. The show, the movie's almost 3 hours long. Fortunately it wasn't that far from my house. But you will be intensely emotionally challenged by this show. So, and there are some really cool things, there are some really scary things, and there are really intense emotional things that go on in the show, and you really get swept up in it, and it is sensorially really intense. This is a NBC Universal production, so you know what's going to happen. I went to Universal a few years ago, the Universal theme park in Florida, and you go to the Harry Potter section, and all the Harry Potter stuff is amazing. They have a terrific roller coaster called my favorite roller coaster of the Harry Potter. There's a couple of Harry Potter ones. The one I liked was the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And you're on this roller coaster. You don't realize you're in a roller coaster. You're indoors. And you're sailing through on this roller coaster. They have it set up so you really can't see that you're on a roller coaster. You just see that you're moving through space. And at times you're flying through the air with Harry Potter and Hermione and Ron on brooms. I'm telling you, you know what happens in Wicked. She flies on a broom, I'll tell you that much. And you know that when she sings Defying Gravity, you're going to be in the air flying with her. They're going to make a roller coaster where you get to fly with somebody. I don't know if it'll be Cynthia Erivo. It'll probably be Cynthia Erivo because that's who's doing the Universal produced the movie. That's not who produced the show on Broadway. So you're going to be flying through the air with Cynthia Erivo going, And I didn't, so that is so interesting that song Defying Gravity is the anthem of Wicked. And that sound, I don't have upper range anymore because I'm 61 years old. But that call in that song, it's just a little piece of music, a little note. That is like the signature sound of Wicked. It's so interesting that they created that if you know the show, you hear that little sound, that's five notes. That you hear those five notes and you know that is representing Wicked. It's so interesting. It's like Ohm. when you're in yoga. Om is about meditation and yoga and chanting. And this is the Wicked theme. And you hear it and you know it. So it's very interesting. There are some interesting portrayals in the movie. Of course, it's Cynthia Erivo as Elphaba and Ariana Grande. She looked like a human Tinkerbell in this movie. She's so tiny and so cute. And I'm not going to say anything about her personality in the movie. It was interesting. Let's put it that way. Michelle Yeoh was awesome. Jeff Goldblum was a bumbling wizard. He was very good too. And Bowen Yang was in it too. He was one of the students at the school. He was sort of a background character, like a minor character, but he was in it and he was funny. And then Anthony from Bridgerton is in it. John Baldwin is his name. I think that's what his name is. I can't remember. Anyway, he's Anthony from Bridgerton and he plays Prince Fiero, and he was amazing too. So anyway, if you want to go see it, if you want to have an experience, you could go see the it's what everybody's doing. Of course, everybody's doing, they're going to see Moana too, and they're going to see, the other one. It's Moana 2 and Gladiator. And I don't know if I'll go see Gladiator. It doesn't interest me as much, but Moana 2 I would see. I haven't seen Moana 1 though, so I have to figure out a way to see Moana 1 before I go see Moana 2. So we got to get our Disney stuff up. So anyway, it's very interesting. So health-wise, I'm doing pretty well. It is Thanksgiving weekend, so I'm getting a lot of rest. And so I'm not having any particular symptoms right now. I do have to make sure to take my medicine, get my rest, not do too much because I'm not seeing patients. I'm not married to a computer for hours and hours. So that tends to make me feel better, and I'm getting good sleep. And so that's really nice because I'm going to have 6 days off from patient care. Then I will return to patient care on Tuesday. And so I'm doing okay that way. And Ron's leg still hurt, and by the time you're hearing this, Ron will probably have gotten his results from his deep dive Lyme test, as well as results from his he's going to have an ankle brachial ratio test for blood pressure while exercising and while resting to see if he has intermittent claudication. I'm half hoping that that's what he has, because that can be corrected. And if he needs to have minor surgery to have it corrected, he's going to feel better within a week or two. So that, or maybe even days, I don't know. If it's not that, we're in trouble. And I'm putting money on that he has chronic tick-borne illness, because he's been bitten by so many ticks and he's had measured Lyme disease in the past and babesiosis. So we'll see what he has. And we'll work with him. All right. So, you know, I'm doing a series on osteoarthritis. So this week we're going to talk about osteoarthritis and some health conditional stuff. And then the next 2 weeks, the show will be broadcast on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, the following 2 weeks. So I'm not sure who's going to be listening on those days. So I will try to do a Christmas Day and New Year's Day companion for those shows. So we're not going to talk too much about health stuff, except for maybe some things to think about when you're gathering together with people, like doing immune stuff because you're going to a gathering. But we're going to talk a little bit more about just some things you might be interested in listening to in the background while you're having Christmas Day or preparing for Christmas Day and preparing for New Year's Day, whatever you're happening to do, or dragging yourself out of bed after having a fun New Year's Eve. Anyway, so today I want to talk about some more help and treatments for osteoarthritis. Since maybe you recall, I have been diagnosed with bone on bone. My patellas, both of my patellas, my kneecaps, are bone on bone with my femurs. The femur is the long bone that goes from your hip to your knees, and the patella is your kneecap. And so there's no cartilage in between the two. The patellas are rubbing and creating calcifications, and I have a couple of floating calcifications behind my kneecap in the synovial fluid of my right knee, which is why I get the pain sometimes. I have no pain, virtually no pain right now. When I exercise, I use this terrific bamboo compression sleeve. When I need to, I ice it. I get proper rest and compress it, and then they want me to do exercises. So I'm getting back to doing standing yoga, regular yoga, in addition to the yin and restorative yoga, to make my legs stronger. And I hadn't been doing as much standing yoga, and I did a yoga class today and found that my legs feel a little bit weak for yoga poses. So I'll get back to doing more of that. And I'm doing exercises to help strengthen my knees, which is what they told me to do. They also told me, ride your bike. So I'm riding bike as tolerated. And it is including, right now it's gotten cold. The temperature dropped pretty quick. The last time I was on the bike outdoors was November 20th. And I've been on Zwift since then. So I've been riding indoors. And so I'm doing some lighter workouts, some group workouts. And some today I did an interval workout, and I'll continue to do interval workouts at least twice a week. And depending on how many days a week I manage to get on the bike. But I did an interval workout yesterday, which means I didn't want to do one today. Tomorrow I'll probably do a group ride. Monday I'll probably do an interval ride, and then rest on Tuesday. So anyway, I'm able to do those things. So one of the things they said to me is that at this time they manage pain. And one of the ways that you can manage pain is to take medication. I'm not taking any pharmaceuticals because I don't need to. I don't have enough pain to do that. And I'm taking a lot of things to reduce inflammation, which I'll talk about. The other thing is injections. And again, I don't have significant pain, so I don't need to have injections right now. So the first injection they want to offer you is cortisone, which is covered by insurance. The next one they want to offer you is hyaluronic acid, which is a natural substance that your body makes. And hyaluronic acid is in a lot of skin lotion. And it's in, I talked about this last week, it's in salves for your vaginal health, because hyaluronic acid is a humectant. It draws moisture to it. So it helps to lubricate things, and it's really nice to have around, and your body does make it. So they can inject hyaluronic acid into your knees, and that's something I would be interested in. I'm not going to get it at this time, but if I get to a painful place, I might be interested in it. And then the third thing they offer you is PRP. That's platelet-rich plasma. And platelet-rich plasma is not covered by insurance. And they told me how much it would cost per injection. So anyway, I wanted to tell you what platelet-rich plasma is. So let's talk about that. So PRP, platelet-rich plasma, is a substance that's thought to promote healing when injected. So it actually helps you to heal the arthritis in your joints. Researchers have made PRP by isolating plasma from blood and concentrating it, and athletes have been known to use the injections to help heal injuries. So it's thought to promote healing when it's injected. It's a component of your blood that contains special factors or proteins that help your blood to clot. It also contains proteins that support cell growth. Researchers have produced PRP by isolating plasma from blood and concentrating it. The idea that injecting PRP into damaged tissues stimulates your body to grow new healthy cells and promote healing. Because the tissue growth factors are more concentrated in the prepared growth injections, researchers think the body's tissues may heal faster. It hasn't been definitively proven or approved as a treatment by the FDA. That may be why it's not covered by insurance. However, famous athletes have been known to use it to help heal injuries. So PRP is used for a bunch of things. It's used, PRP is used in, it's injected into the scalp to help promote hair growth and prevent hair loss. I'm not concerned about that. I think my hair is doing pretty well, even though I don't feel like I have as much hair as some people, because it's so curly, you can't tell. And I do have less hair than I had, say, 10 or 15 years ago, but I still have enough to make me happy. And I think I'm maintaining it in part because I'm taking some B vitamins and because I'm taking collagen. I eat protein and I'm taking bone broth protein also. I take both bone broth protein and collagen pretty much every day. And so that's helping me. But if you have hair loss, PRP is something that you can get to promote hair growth and prevent loss. There's research that shows it's effective in treating androgenic alopecia, that is male pattern baldness. So whether you're male or female, you can have androgenic hair loss. Women do get so-called male pattern baldness. It's more properly called androgenic hair loss because both men and women have androgens and estrogens. We just have less androgens and they have less estrogens, but we both have them. If you had zero testosterone in your body as a female and zero DHEA, you'd have no sex drive. And in fact, when you give women testosterone to take, they increase their sex drive. Or they can, anyway. So you can inject PRP into the scalp, and it'll help tissues to regenerate and grow, and you can grow more hair. PRP is helpful for tendon injuries. Those are your tough, thick bands of tissue that connect your muscle to your bone. They tend to be slow to heal after injury. You can use PRP injections to treat chronic tendonitis, like tennis elbow, Achilles tendonitis, jumper's knee, which causes pain in the patellar tendon in the knee. You can have PRP for acute injuries. It's given to people who play sports, pulled hamstrings or knee sprains. You can use PRP for that. You can use PRP post-surgically. So after surgery, a torn tendon like a rotator cuff in the shoulder or other ligaments like the anterior cruciate ligament can be helped by PRP injections. Osteoarthritis, right here, baby. PRP injections in the knee may help people with osteoarthritis. So it has been studied directly for the kind of osteoarthritis that I have. They found that PRP injections were more effective than hyaluronic acid, which is a traditional therapy for treating osteoarthritis. But the trial was small, so they need to do more trials. So if it gets really bad, I would be interested in PRP. How do you prepare? So it can be injected in different ways. Sometimes they give you a topical numbing lidocaine solution to the area. You may have to arrive early to a session, so the lidocaine didn't take effect. Other times you get a local anesthetic mixed with the PRP to reduce discomfort. And they'll inject, or sometimes if you're having surgery anyway, they'll apply the PRP during the surgery. In that instance, prep for PRP injection follows. You have to follow the surgeon's recommendations. So the injection process, here's what happens at a typical injection. A healthcare professional is going to draw a sample of your blood. The amount of the sample depends on where the PRP will inject it. For the amount of blood taken into the scalp, it's only 20 milliliters. So 20 milliliters is, so if a teaspoon is 5 milliliters, so that's 4 teaspoons. It's a tablespoon. And a tablespoon plus 1 teaspoon, that's how much for scalp. That I'm assuming that for your knees, it's going to be a bit more than that. So then they centrifuge the blood. The machine spins quickly. The blood components separate. And the separation process takes like 15 minutes. And then the technologist takes the separated plasma and prepares it for injection in the affected area. So I guess they draw your blood that day and they spin it down and you wait and then they come and they inject you. And then they use ultrasound guidance to pinpoint the areas for injection like your tendon. And then they inject it into the affected area. So I'm not supposed to talk about costs, so I won't. But very few insurance plans provide reimbursement. They told me at UConn that it's not covered. And so you have to generally pay for it out of pocket and the cost can vary by location. And so I'm not going to tell you what those are. If you want to know what PRP costs in your area, you should look it up. So the potential side effects, because you're injecting a substance into the skin, there are potential side effects. PRP is what's called autologous, which means it has substance that come directly from your own body. When I had my breast reduction when I was 20, they took blood from me for a possible autologous transfusion if I needed it. And I thankfully never needed it. I didn't bleed enough to need a blood transfusion. But it's autologous means that they take the blood from you, they spin your blood down, and then they use your plasma, put it back in. That's a good thing because you're not going to create antibodies to your own blood. It's nice. So it reduced the risk for an allergic reaction that can occur from injecting other medications. When you get cortisone or hyaluronic acid, you're more likely to react to it because it's a foreign substance. So there are still risks from PRP injections like infection, nerve injury if they accidentally hit a nerve, pain at the injection site, and tissue damage. And you have to discuss the risk with your doctor and the steps to minimize those risks. When it's injected after an injury, your doctor may recommend you rest the affected area, but those recommendations are more related to the injury and less to the PRP injections. Most people, so if you're not acutely injured when you get the PRP injection, you can go back to your daily activities. because they're intended to promote healing or growth. So like if you get the PRP as part of a surgical procedure, you just have to recover from the surgical procedure. If you're acutely injured, you have to play to the injury that you have. If you're not acutely injured and you get the PRP and you're not in pain, you can go back to doing whatever you do. Because they're intended to promote healing or growth, you may not notice an immediate difference after you get the injections, but in several weeks or months, the area may begin healing faster or grow more hair if you're getting it for your scalp than you would have expected if you hadn't received them. So that's very interesting. That's a bunch of stuff about PRP. So now let's go to the things that I am taking for osteoarthritis. One of the things that I am taking is fish oil. I'm taking fish oil for a number of reasons because it's a great anti-inflammatory. So let's talk about treating arthritis with fish oil and omega-3s. So let's first tell you about the history of cod liver oil. In the 19th and 20th centuries, children were often fed a spoonful of cod liver oil, rooted in years and years of folk, hundreds of years of folk medicine, and unflavored cod liver oil tastes pretty gross. So I really recommend that if you're going to get cod liver oil and take the liquid, get flavored. I tried unflavored. It was bad. But if you don't mind getting unflavored, you can do that. It just tastes really fishy. When I offer flavored cod liver or flavored fish oil to my patients as a liquid, most of my patients are like, no, I don't want it. But I take liquid fish oil every day. It's lemon flavored. I don't mind it. It tastes oily and lemony. It's really, if it tastes fishy, it's probably gone off, but I don't have a problem with it. And the cool thing about taking liquid fish oil is that it's one and done. You put it in a spoon, you take it down and you can take it once a day and you're done. And it's more economical, per unit volume. It costs less than fish oil in pills because I have to put it in a pill and the pills take up space. So when you take it in a liquid, you get more doses out of a liquid bottle than you do out of a bottle of pills. And you can take more. It's easier to take more, take a higher dose, because you put it in the tablespoon. So I'm taking half a tablespoon a day. I just take an ordinary, take a measuring tablespoon. I just take a tablespoon that you would eat with, and I fill it up halfway and I take it, and I'm getting in over 1,000 milligrams of EPA, probably 1,200 milligrams of EPA, and over 500 milligrams of DHA, which are the omega-3s that you're looking for. So medical science confirmed deriving nutrients from certain foods is useful for certain conditions. Rickets is caused by a lack of vitamin D in the body, was common prior to the mid-1950s. Now cod liver oil was used to treat rickets because cod liver oil had enough vitamin D to help to treat rickets. And it also has omega-3 fatty acids. Towards the end of the 20th century, researchers began studying fish oil. Unlike cod liver oil, it doesn't have A and D in it. And I take vitamin A and D separately. However, it's much richer in omega-3 fatty acids than cod liver oil. And omega-3s are excellent for heart health and arthritis. So EPA and DHA, I mentioned, the two omega-3 fatty acids that are in fish oil are EPA, which does not stand for the Environmental Protection Agency. It does stand for eicosapentaenoic acid. Say that three times fast. So eicosapentaenoic, I think the eico is 8 and the pentaenoic is 5. So I don't know, that may mean that the first carbon or the first double bond happens at the 13th carbon, I think, but I'm not sure. And docosahexaenoic acid. So that docosahexaenoic, I think, is hex is 6. So, yeah, so that's going to be 12. I'm not sure. 12 and 6. I don't want to say the wrong thing. But those are numbers. The eicosapentaenoic, I believe, is 8 and 5, which might be 13. Docosahexaenoic might be... So hex is 6 and docosa may be 12. So it might be at the 18th carbon, and why it's put together that way, I don't know. But anyway, it has to do with what carbon the first double bond occurs at in the fat. So EPA and DHA can reduce inflammation, which causes swelling and pain. There's research that shows both acids may suppress the body's immune system, but Another study showed that DHA might enhance immune function instead. DHA is more effective at reducing inflammation than EPA, but they both have a role. All of the effects make fish oil beneficial for people with arthritis. EPA and DHA have other health benefits. They can prevent heart attacks by making it harder for blood to clot. They help lower blood triglyceride levels. I take so much fish oil, my triglycerides are very good. I eat more carbs than maybe I should, but my triglyceride levels are great. My triglyceride levels are in the 60s, which is really a healthy level for triglycerides. And it helps with blood pressure. Of course, it doesn't help with blood pressure enough for me, but I wonder if my blood pressure would be even higher if I didn't take so much fish oil. So when you take EPA with statins, it's more effective in reducing the inflammation of arteriosclerosis than medication alone. So even if you're taking statins, it's a good idea to take fish oil. And statins don't always lower triglycerides. I'll have people come in on statins and they have high triglycerides, even though their LDL and HDL are good. So the fish oil, you can try fish oil first before you try one of the triglyceride lowering drugs like your fenofibrate, which comes with side effects. But fish oil has so many health benefits, it's a good idea to try it. It's certainly working for me. That is one way fish oil is helping me. I'm wondering if it's helping. Like I said, I have no pain. I have virtually no pain in my knees. My knees go off sometimes, but I'm taking a number of things that are probably helping with the inflammation. So what it's not telling you here is that EPA and DHA are omega-3 fatty acids. So if they're omega-3 fatty acids, what I said about eicosapentaenoic and docosahexaenoic may be wrong. It's not, if they're omega-3s, that, I'm sorry, I've said that wrong. Omega-3 fatty acids means that the first double bond happens at the third carbon. So if they're omega-3 fatty acids, that's what's going on. So those numbers there probably have to do with how many carbons there are in the fat. So you count the carbons, and one is probably 13 and the other is going to be something like 6 plus 12, 18. So anyway, so these omega-3 fatty acids, they reduce inflammation because they help to create the PGE1 and PGE3 series of prostaglandins, which are anti-inflammatory compounds in your body. They reduce inflammation by upregulating the level of anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. Like, they don't suppress inflammation. So for example, when you take aspirin, cyclooxygenase inhibitor. Cyclooxygenase is an inflammatory pathway, and aspirin suppresses that. And things like curcumin suppress both cyclooxygenase and lipoxygenase. And the thing with aspirin also, it doesn't suppress lipoxygenase. So if you take too many NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, they suppress cyclooxygenase, but they do not suppress lipoxygenase. So you have a relatively higher level of lipoxygenase, and that increases inflammation. So you can, if you take too many NSAIDs, it can make your arthritis worse. So please be aware of that. If you take naproxen or aspirin or ibuprofen and you take it to excess, you can enhance your, even though it reduces the inflammation to reduce pain in the short term, in the long term, you can create more osteoarthritis. That's why I try not to take them. I will take a naproxen and a Aleve once in a while if I'm in a lot of pain, and arthritis pain, I won't make me take an Aleve. What does is nerve pain. Yeah, when I get femoral neuralgia or sciatica, that's when I'm going to take the Aleve. But I don't take them that often. And right now I'm not having those problems, so I don't touch them, because in terms of the arthritis pain, what I'm taking is working for it. So anyway, so you're upregulating your PGE1 and PGE3 series, and you're downregulating your arachidonic acid, your PGE2 series. So PGE2 will be raised by excessive omega-6 fatty acids. So you've heard all the furor around don't eat seed oils, don't eat your cottonseed oil, sunflower oil, sunflower, soybean oil, and cottonseed oil. You don't want to eat those because those they have omega-6 fatty, canola oil as well. They have a lot of omega-6 fatty acid, which upregulates arachidonic acid, omega-6 fatty acids, which are pro-inflammatory. And these guys, when you have a preponderance of PGE1 and PGE3, you're going to downregulate that PGE2 series, the arachidonic acid. And that is why we hope that you will stay away from meat that has been fed on corn and grain as opposed to grass-fed meat. Grass-fed meat has an omega-3 fatty acid profile that's similar to oily fish. So you're going to have a 4-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. Whereas if you eat meat that has been fed on corn and grain because of the corn oil and the other oils in the grains, the animals are going to have flesh that is higher, much higher in omega-6 fatty acids. So you have more fuel to create more arachidonic acid. So you're going to have more inflammation. So that's why it's important to do grass-fed beef and free-range chicken and oily fish. It's not just because so everybody thinks, oh, meat's going to give me heart disease. I'm going to be a vegetarian. You don't have to do that unless you won't refuse to buy grass-fed meat. If you buy grass-fed meat, it's not going to give you cardiovascular disease. What's going to give you cardiovascular disease is grain-fed CAFO meat that comes from animals that are not allowed to free range and who are given too much grain. So whether they are cattle, whether they're, they're cattle, they're, steers, or they're chicken, various kinds of poultry, or they're fish that have been farm raised and given poor quality feed, that they can have higher levels, much higher levels of omega-6 fatty acids. That's why you stay away from them. So it's not animal protein per se that gives you cardiovascular disease. It's animal protein that's been fed on poor quality food that gives you cardiovascular disease. So some people say the heck with it and they just become vegetarians, which you can do, but then you're going to, you have the potential to miss out on some of the good benefits of, so for example, free range beef has high conjugated linoleic acid in it, which is a great anti-inflammatory. It helps you with appetite. It helps you with weight. So you're going to get more conjugated linoleic acid. You're also going to get more vitamin K2. The animals that are grass-fed and finished and eat only grass, they have more of those nutrients in them. And the animals are healthier. The animals themselves are less inflamed. So an animal that's being fed on grain is going to be more likely to get sick, and they're going to have to be given antibiotics. They're not going to need antibiotics nearly as often if they're grass-fed and finished because they're eating the diet they're supposed to eat. So what's the difference between cod liver oil and fish oil? So cod liver oil is a great source of omega-3s, vitamins A and D. It's made from the livers of cod, the fish, that are cooked and then pressed. Fish oil is made from a variety of oily fleshed cold water fish, including mackerel, tuna, herring, salmon, and cod liver. They can also have whale or seal blubber. What it doesn't say is anchovies. It can also be made from anchovies. A lot of times the fish oil that you get in this, that you order from, high quality supplements, it's going to mostly be mackerel and anchovies because they're cheap. They're easy to get. They're easy to press. And they're relatively less expensive than salmon. Salmon and tuna. But you can get fish oil that's made from tuna oil and fish oil that's made from cod, fish oil that's made from salmon. Salmon oil, pure salmon oil, tends to not have as high levels of omega-3 fatty acids than the ones that are made from anchovies and mackerel. So I tend not to get salmon oil and tend not to recommend it. People think it's cool, but you could eat salmon. You're definitely going to get omega-3s from salmon. The thing with salmon is salmon spends a part of its life in fresh water. So it's not as high in omega-3 fatty acids as a fish that spends its time in cold, deep water, like a tuna. Tuna, of course, you're concerned about because if fish gets very, very large, then it's going to bioaccumulate toxins. So you're going to be looking at things like like plastics and phthalates and dioxins, as well as heavy metals. When the bigger the fish is, that's why very large cold water fish are concerning. When I used to go to the fish market in Willimantic, we had Paul there who would do the fishing, and he would select smaller tuna. And he said, because the animals are small, they're not going to bioaccumulate heavy metals as much. So that's something to look at. And there are brands you can buy of tuna at the store that say right on them, lowest levels of mercury of any tuna on the market. So you can get those. I do not recommend eating tuna every day, but tuna, the thing with tuna is that it is a good source of protein. It comes prepared, so it's easy protein, which a lot of people need something easy that they don't have to cook. And it also has low levels of mercury in it. And it also has great levels of omega-3s in it, because it's a cold water fish, has a lot of good omega-3s in it. So I like to eat seared tuna. I don't eat it all the time. We eat it sometimes. And I like to eat canned tuna sometimes. I don't eat it frequently, but if you ate it a couple of times a week, you're probably going to be okay. Like, you open a can and eat half of it one day, half of it another day, and don't have it for the rest of the week. And just make sure that you're eating cruciferous vegetables, or you're taking something like modified citrus pectin regularly, which can help you to chelate out heavy metals. If you eat a lot of fiber and you eat cruciferous vegetables and things with sulfur in them, and you're getting heavy metals on board, you're going to help to chelate some of that stuff out if you've got a lot of throughput through your digestive system. Anything with sulfur in it, sulfur is a negatively charged ion. So sulfur itself, as it goes through your body, can help to chelate out positively charged heavy metals. And then sulfur helps you to make things like glutathione and calcium D-glucarate, which can help you chelate out minerals that you don't need, heavy metals that are positively charged. So if you're eating salmon, it's a good idea to have some broccoli with it. Or not, actually, salmon is very low in heavy metals, because they spend a good portion of their life in fresh water. You're going to be more worried about heavy metals from swordfish, tuna, tilefish, very large fish that live deep in the ocean. So that's the time to eat. You should be eating the broccoli anyway, unless you have digestive issues from it. But cruciferous vegetables are really good for you because of the sulfur compounds, unless... And if you have thyroid issues, you know that they have goitrins in them. So if you cook them, you'll inactivate the goitrins. The people who really get thyroid problems from eating cruciferous vegetables are people who are juicing kale. So they're eating a lot of kale every day that's been juiced. It hasn't been cooked. So the goitrins are not inactivated. And I've seen that this happen with people who juice kale. Particularly because people tend to juice that as opposed to broccoli. And they're having a lot of kale leaves in their smoothie every day, juiced down, so they're getting concentrated goitrins, and they actually get tired and they go off it and their thyroid function improves. So be careful of that. All right. So the difference between fish oil and cod liver oil is mostly that fish oil doesn't really have a lot of vitamins and minerals. So you get your vitamins and minerals from other foods or other supplements, whereas cod liver oil does have enough A and D in it to give you at least the RDI of vitamins A and D. So when you look at arthritis comes from the words arthro, which means joint, and itis, which means inflammation. There's over 100 different types of arthritis, and they all affect the joints. Well, that would make sense, because what kind of arthritis would affect something other than a joint if arthro means joint? Anyway, the second most common form of arthritis is rheumatoid arthritis, which is a chronic autoimmune disease that causes the immune system to attack the joint's synovial capsule. Both types of arthritis cause inflammation and pain. So fish oil is actually preferred for arthritis. For the omega-3 fatty acids in fish oil to work against arthritis, you have to do a fairly large quantity of it every day. Fish or cod liver oil in capsules makes it easy. I'm telling you that liquid fish oil makes it even easier. Because cod liver oil contains a lot of vitamin A and D, taking too much can be toxic. So that's why it's better to take fish oil. That's one of the reasons it's better to take fish oil, so you're not going to overdo your vitamin A and D. And you get your vitamin A and D other ways, by eating food. I take a few drops of vitamin A a day, and I take a few drops of vitamin D a day. Fish oil can cause you to belch. Poor Ron, I've given him every version of fish oil I can. I've given him pills, I've given him liquid, I've given him enterically coated. Enterically coated means that the pill has a coating on it so that it doesn't break down in your stomach. It waits till it gets into your, so it's acid safe. So it gets past your stomach and it doesn't break down till it gets into your intestines where you then absorb it. Didn't matter. He gets heartburn from it. Can't take fish oil. What he can take is SPM, which is specialized pro-resolving mediators, which is a form of essential fatty acid that's very anti-inflammatory. One of the reasons you take fish oil is it has compounds in it called resolvins. And the resolvins are the very active part of the fish oil. And they resolve inflammation. Well, you can make SPM out of plant sources. You can make them out of algal sources and other plant oils. So I give Ron SPM and he can take that and doesn't make him burp. And I think I gave him, you can make SPM out of fish oil too. And I gave him that and that didn't cause a problem either. So now he takes SPM and I used to take SPM. I'm not taking it anymore because I'm taking so much stuff. I'm just taking the fish oil. I'm taking enough fish oil definitely to make a difference. So it can give you a bad taste in your mouth. It doesn't do that for me. It can give you bad breath. Doesn't do that for me. Heartburn and nausea. I don't get nausea. I get heartburn and nausea from too much B complex, not from fish oil. Can give you loose stools too. And I've seen that with my patients. Some patients can't take omega-3s because they get loose stools from it. But that doesn't happen to everybody. I don't think it happens to most people, but it can happen. What's my saying? Anything can do anything to anybody. So somebody walks in and says, this product is doing this to me. You take their word for it. And the experiment is go off it. See if the symptom gets better. Go back on it. See if you get it again. And if you get it again, that's it. You're not going to take it. And because of biochemical individuality, anything can cause anything in anyone. All right. So when you're going to take fish oil, make sure you talk to your doctor about it and talk to your doctor if you're already taking NSAIDs or anything that's immunosuppressive or if you're on blood thinners. People who are on blood thinners can't always take fish oil, whether they're on warfarin, which is a vitamin K-dependent blood thinner, or clopidogrel, which is a direct antiplatelet aggregator, or if they're on one of the 10A inhibitors, which are the two I know, there might be more than two, but the ones I know about are apixaban and rivaroxaban. Apixaban is, one of them is Xarelto. I think rivaroxaban is Xarelto and apixaban is Eliquis. So those two drugs are 10A inhibitors. They are not vitamin K dependent. They block the 10A enzyme in the clotting cascade. And that they're called, so note their names, Xarelto is XA, which is the Roman numeral 10A. It's because it's a 10A inhibitor. Eliquis is just an elegant sounding name. Who knows why they called it that? But both the generic names, apixaban and rivaroxaban, have XA in the name. That's because 10A, right? And a ban means it's banning 10A. The ban at the end of the name is because it's banning 10A. Isn't that clever? So anyway, so that's the deal with fish oil. Fish oil is something that is useful for lowering triglycerides. It's also useful for helping osteoarthritis, mostly because it reduces inflammation. I believe it's also because when you have adequate essential fatty acids, you're introducing essential fatty acids into your body. Essential fatty acids are part of every cell membrane in your body. And you need to have cell membrane fluidity. If you eat too much arachidonic acid, like from corn-fed cattle, or you eat too many potato chips that are deep fried in corn oil or in cottonseed oil or canola oil, you're going to get too much omega-6. And those omega-6s are going to get incorporated into your cells. And especially if they become hydrogenated, they don't allow stuff to go in and out of the cell. And so it's important for you to have good membrane fluidity. So poor quality fats will make you have less membrane fluidity. So anything that needs to get into the cell, whether it's sugar or, you know, molecules that need to bond or magnesium or vitamin C or vitamin A, whatever it is that needs to get into the cell, it's not going to be able to get into the cell as readily if you don't have good membrane fluidity. And so when you take essential fatty acids, omega-3s like EPA and DHA, it's going to incorporate itself into your cell membranes and stuff is going to get in and out of your cells better. And so what you're going to have, so if you need to get curcuminoids into your knee joint to reduce inflammation, it's going to get in better if you have good cell membranes in the synovial fluid, which is what the fish oil is going to give you. So it's not just about reducing inflammation. It's also about improving membrane fluidity so that you can get nutrients in to help rebuild the joint. And that's not just about it's not just about rebuilding the membrane. If you want to get collagen in, collagen's going to get in better. If you're taking bone broth protein, the collagen elements, if you're needing vitamin C, if you're needing anti-inflammatories like curcumin, if you're needing, any vitamin C, zinc, selenium, copper, all of these things are part of your joint substance. They will be escorted into the cells more readily if you have good membrane fluidity. So membrane, part of fish oil is about membrane fluidity, not just reducing inflammation. Cool, huh? All right. So here's some natural home remedies to help with osteoarthritis. We have a few more minutes to talk about this. So here are the natural, so what helps with osteoarthritis? Exercising and maintaining a moderate weight. My mate's moderate. I don't know if it's a little more than moderate, but it's, I could be a lot bigger. I could also be smaller, but I'm able to exercise at a level that is helpful for me. So getting regular exercise is important at whatever weight you're at. Maintaining a moderate weight are helpful for reducing pain and improving mobility if you have osteoarthritis. Hot and cold compresses can help. Now, my chiropractor is much more in favor of cold than hot. And I was always more of an alternating hot and cold person. But he said, no, you should just be icing. You can ice 20 minutes up to 3 times a day. So I don't ice every day. If I notice inflammation or if I actually have some achiness, I will ice, and it's remarkable how well it works. So you get a nice ice compress, a cold compress, and you can get, cold compresses that have a gel in them that freezes, or you can heat if you want to do heat. I haven't heated mine, but you can throw it in the microwave and it'll heat up for you. I keep it in the freezer, and it has a Velcro wrap that goes around my knee, and I pull it out when I need it, and I put it on. I set a timer for 20 minutes and relax and elevate my knee. After 20 minutes, my knee's kind of numb, and then I go to sleep, and next morning, knee's much better. It's amazing, and that's with one application at the end of the day. My understanding was alternating hot and cold, and I think that Dr. Scott would disagree with that. He's like, don't do heat, only do cold, which is fine. I followed what he said, and it's effective. But I would tell people, do 3 minutes of hot, 30 seconds of cold, and alternate 3 times, and that's helpful too. Sometimes heat can help to reduce the inflammation if you don't do it for too long. You can also get in an Epsom salt bath, and Epsom salt baths reduce the nerves. So if you have pain, it can reduce the nerves. Probably a good idea to do the Epsom salt bath, so then you're nice and relaxed, and then when you come out, ice it after that. And you always, in hydrotherapy, we learned in naturopathic college, always end with cold. That if you're doing a heating treatment, you always finish with cold, whether it's a hot fomentation or a constitutional hydrotherapy or a foot bath. You always end with cold. And if you're putting hot heat on a distal part of the body, you put cold on the head so that you don't get a headache and don't get too much circulation to your head and get a headache. So hot and cold compresses, joint supports, and pain-relieving ointments can help. So you can do pain-relieving ointments that you can get over-the-counter Voltaren, which is diclofenac. You can get those in over-the-counter strengths now. You can get over-the-counter lidocaine. You can get over-the-counter applications that have herbs in them. I have some herbal patches that are meant for knees, and I put them on, and they can be helpful too. So green tea and ginger are also anti-inflammatory. There's not a lot of research, but they're supposed to be helpful. And green tea and ginger I probably take internally. I was taking ginger capsules for a while. I've stopped. But I love to eat ginger. So we eat ginger in our food. I eat ginger candy. I will sometimes have ginger in tea. We have ginger as a seasoning in a lot of foods. What was the other one? A green tea, green tea I'm actually taking a green tea pill in addition to sometimes drinking green tea. So I'm taking the concentrated pill because there's an inflammatory pathway that I can't remember which one, but there's an inflammatory pathway that Buhner mentioned in one of his books about Lyme disease, that green tea calms that pathway. And I'm taking a decaffeinated green tea. And green tea, it's wonderful antioxidant. The EGCG in it is a great antioxidant. It helps with healthy cellular expression. And there's some possibility that it can prevent and treat cancer. So I think I'm covered for a lot of stuff, and it's a great anti-inflammatory. It's a degenerative disease that causes tissues in your joints to break down, and which is not the same as osteoporosis, which causes bones to become brittle. And the CDC, of course, says that there's over 100 types of arthritis. Osteoarthritis is the most common and affects more than 32.5 million people in the United States. Under the age of 45, it's more common in men. Over the age of 45, it's common in women. When you have a joint, if you have rheumatoid arthritis, you're going to get bone erosion and you're going to get a swollen, inflamed synovial membrane. When you have osteoporosis, your bone density goes down. You have less minerals and protein in your bones. And when you have osteoarthritis, the cartilage is thin and the bone ends rub together. And that's what I have. And they're showing a knee. That's exactly what I have. I saw my x-ray. That wasn't fun. I mean, it was interesting, but it wasn't fun to learn that about my knees. Though each person can experience osteoarthritis differently, you'll commonly have joint pain and stiffness in your hands, knees, hips, neck, or low back. I definitely have low back and knees, to some extent neck. There are treatments that can help you manage the symptoms, and I am running out of time, so I'm going to have to pick up where I left off. I'm not sure I'm going to pick up next week because it's going to be your Christmas companion, and after that your New Year's companion. So I may pick up in the new year. Anyway, to ease osteoarthritis pain and stiffness, there are medical treatments and home remedies, and treatment relies on a combination of conventional and lifestyle changes. Medications can treat pain. They can also cause side effects when you take them long term. Your home remedies don't necessarily completely replace your medical treatments, but may be able to help you manage arthritis pain with fewer side effects. And in 2015, research showed that lifestyle changes and natural remedies can be very important in keeping your symptoms at bay. You should discuss this with your doctor, and your friendly local naturopath can help you with it. So that's all the time we have today. We'll probably discuss this in the new year. So thank you for listening today. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza will be making his shows on a different day for the month of December because he's teaching a fitness class at our usual time. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.